First, a little bit of painful reflection. Crucifixion was not a symbol of Christianity when Jesus was killed. It was a form of humiliating public torture. And it was reserved for slaves, pirates, and enemies of the state, and was one of the chief instruments of violent oppression in the Roman Empire. Though I also learned that it has been used by other societies, and even as recently as in this century, in Syria, during the civil war that is still going on. It was designed to be as painful and as humiliating as possible. After an agonizing death that could take days, the bodies of the victims were typically left on the cross as carrion for wild animals and were not afforded a decent burial. Today, executions are more private, hidden away events, sanitized even. Public torture and execution, lynching, is certainly something that is within our historical moment and memory. Between the end of the Civil War and the 1960s, there were about 5,000 documented lynchings of African Americans in the United States. We can't say with any confidence, really, that we are no longer capable of this kind of community-sanctioned violence, but we hope and pray that it is something that our institutions, our government, our police, our system of justice, and our communities can protect us from. It still seems remote from us. The cross has been almost completely abstracted as a symbol, especially in the Protestant church. In our churches here in the U.S., we typically only see the instrument of crucifixion, not the person suffering crucifixion. We see the stake and the crossbeam. We don't easily see or recognize the suffering that it causes, and we don't have the kind of visceral reaction to it and fear that people in the Roman world would have had when they would see such a symbol. As a child, I spent time living in Mexico City with my younger sisters and my mother, and I remember going into the beautiful colonial churches there and seeing crucifixes that were a little more realistic. Life-sized plaster figures of Jesus, plaster or wood, figures nailed to the cross with visible nails, and even colored wounds with blood dripping from them. A much more vivid and realistic depiction of Jesus' wounds as he was tortured and died. I point this out because different cultures deal with human suffering in different ways, both from the standpoint of witnessing and being a victim. And this influences the way we understand the crucifixion and the suffering of Jesus. But no matter what, we are distant from Jesus' suffering in time. This is worth reflecting on as we hear the gospel today. In the gospel reading today, we hear three responses to the suffering caused by crucifixion. We hear the response of the two criminals that are on either side of Jesus, and then we hear the response of Jesus himself. One of the criminals crucified beside Jesus responds with mockery, with anger, and judgment. "Save yourself and us," mocking Jesus. The second criminal responds with fear and anxiety. "Do you not fear God?" And maybe some compassion for Jesus embedded in that. But from Jesus, we hear forgiveness, compassion, and hope. Anger, fear, and anxiety are all normal human responses to suffering. especially when in response to our own suffering or the suffering of those who are close to us, our families, our friends. We want someone to save us, someone or God, to come and alleviate our suffering, and we are angered and afraid when we do not get any relief. Jesus gives us a response in the midst of his own suffering that not only gives hope to the criminals that were beside him, but to all of us. He offers forgiveness and a vision of a new kingdom, paradise. This is a kingdom of mercy and compassion that Christ the King rules, not one of domination and violence, and is why we read this passage today in the lectionary on the feast of Christ the King. Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. I wonder, what does paradise look like to you? The word paradise comes from the Greek, paradisos, and means something more like an enclosed park or garden with a shady stream in the middle of it. In Hebrew, the concept of Eden is closest to the meaning of the word paradise. The criminal, perhaps catching a glimpse of Jesus for who really is, who Jesus really is, said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus responded to this poor, suffering man, "Not only will I remember you, you will be with me in paradise today." Today, not tomorrow when this is all over or after resurrection, but now. In my understanding, paradise is many things, but as we heard in the hymn today, the Lord is the Lord of the Sabbath. And for today, it is a place maybe that we need for rest. Trauma and suffering and oppression are human experiences that we inflict on each other in our societies. And one form of resistance to this oppression is to take rest. The new covenant that God established with Moses and the Israelites in Exodus included Sabbath as a commandment. To get to the promised land, the Israelites needed to commit themselves to a society that included rest. From rest and intentionally slowing life down, we come to love our neighbor. We have the time to love our neighbor. How do we see Jesus' kingdom today? Though all of us here at St. James today are not in the midst of the suffering caused by the torture of the cross, and I don't want to minimize that physical torture that is experienced on the cross, we all bear crosses of some kind. We are all wounded, and trauma and oppression of one kind or another is part of our daily lives and experience. If Jesus can offer us the hope of rest in the midst of his terrible suffering, can we work to offer each other that promise as well? What if we offered each other a little bit of an enclosed garden with a shady stream running through it? Believe it or not, I heard of a ministry in Atlanta led by a pastor named Tricia Hersey that gives a space for people to bring a mat and take a nap. And this is not just a novelty for privileged but harried folks. Today, busyness and hurry is an epidemic, but her ministry is also very much about resistance, a form of resistance, and especially to the African-American community and the historical legacy of oppression that the African-American community carries with it. So she offers that ministry to that community as a form of healing from the trauma of historical oppression. Sometimes we have to resist by asking for relief from the unintended demands and burdens that we place on each other. Especially today, we are often locked into our schedules and routines, forgetting that those around us have different schedules and different routines. We are out of sync. In agrarian times, when everyone was farming or lived in small villages, people didn't have clocks. They didn't keep track of time that way. They kept track of time by the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun. That was a clock, the day. And the seasons, winter, spring, summer, and fall. It was much easier to be in connection with people and community than it is now when we have to take out our cell phones and look for that little window of time that our two schedules match up. If someone says to you, "No, I'm not available," or "Please respect this time of rest and don't send me requests or call me on my vacation," we should respect that. There are actually companies today that delete all messages that are sent to employees during vacations. They send the sender a little message, a polite note, that says that the company values that person's time of vacation and rest and relaxation. And that if you, the sender, needs to talk to someone, contact someone else in the company who's not on vacation, or wait until that person returns. But in the meantime, we're going to delete that message because we're not going to bring that person back from vacation and have them have to deal with 2,000 email messages that have come to them since they were on vacation. And if someone reminds us of this politely, or maybe in a short little note, we should be grateful and not take it personally, because this is a systematic issue. This is a systemic issue in our society, this busyness and this hurriedness. When we resist with Sabbath, not only are we better neighbors and more loving to each other, but in this rest, we meet God. We meet Jesus in the garden. Kosuke Koyama, a Japanese theologian, wrote in his book, 3 Mile an Hour God, "God walks slowly because he is love. If he is not love, he would have gone much faster. Love has its speed. It is an inner speed. It is a spiritual speed. It is a different kind of speed from the technological speed to which we are accustomed. It is slow, yet it is Lord over all other speeds, since it is the speed of love." Let us live into Jesus' promise and join him in his kingdom. We will need to slow down to get there. Amen.